Hello, welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron, your host, and today we have a parent who's very passionate about early intervention and the power of publishing, the power of books. She's a mother with a child with dyslexia, 13-year-old now, an author, and a publisher. She's published a number of books, decodable books, living in the USA, Philadelphia. It's great to introduce, now let me get the name right, Chigdem Nebel.
That's good. Thank you, yeah. Darius, for having me on.
It's great to have you here. I'm really looking forward to hearing your story. I mean, every time we do a dyslexia story, it's just marvelous how each story is different. It's like dyslexia, you know, affects people in multiple different ways. It's same dyslexia, but different effects on people's lives. So looking forward to hearing your story. Now, obviously, right now, you're a mother, you're a publisher, you're an author. But before we get to that stage of all those things that you're doing now, where did it all begin for you? You know, what was life like before you discovered about dyslexia in your son?
So I think we were very lucky because we diagnosed my son when he was 6. And, you know, life before that, I have an older daughter who we don't even remember how she learned to read. She just picked up a book and she was reading, typical learner. And before that, if you look at, you know, my childhood, my native language is a very phonetic language. I learned to read relatively easily, but comprehension never came easy to me. I was very strong with numbers and words were never my friend. So I studied engineering and I just thought that I never really liked reading, and I was just good with numbers. So I studied engineering and I chose my life path based on things that felt comfortable for me. And when my son was in first grade, the first couple of months, he was very good with math as well. And he said, I can't do math anymore because of word problems. So he couldn't read the word problems and make sense of what the question was. So he said, there's something wrong with me. You know, we kind of knew that he wasn't reading as well as his peers and, you know, what my daughter was doing at that age. But we never really compare kids. Everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses, and you know, they have their own speed of learning. So we always said we want to meet our kids where they are and not push them to where we want them to be. So I went to school and I kind of had a chat with the teacher, you know, great school, great teachers, but they said, you know, just he's early. He's still really young. He's on the younger side of the class as well. He's a typical boy, full of energy. So we could wait. My gut said we shouldn't wait. So we went privately to get him diagnosed. And he was diagnosed with dyslexia when he was 6.
Fantastic. And, okay. I often ask people what their wake-up call was and if they can pinpoint it to a conversation, a person, an event. So is there sort of like a wake-up moment or wake-up call where you said, we've got to go and do this privately?
So the wake-up call for me was my son at age 6 saying something is wrong with me. And as I started putting, you know, things together, he also started having some behavioral issues. He was he's a very kind, nice guy, but he was becoming the class clown. And every time we said, okay, let's do some reading, he would first just be very, you know, cute and let's try to avoid it. And then when he couldn't avoid it, he would become a little bit angry and frustrated, which wasn't very typical for him. So I would say him coming to us and saying something is wrong with me, his behavioral change, he started becoming sadder as well overall. So those two, I think, were the wake-up calls. And I was very lucky. A couple of years before that, we were at a Halloween party for one of my friends, and a friend of mine said their daughter was dyslexic. And I said, what's that? And she gave me an elevator pitch of what dyslexia is. And I put it in the back of my mind. And as I started observing my son, everything she was saying applied to him. So I called her and I said, what was that word you said your daughter? Your daughter had something. And she said, dyslexia? I said, okay, I just wrote it down and I went on the internet. I bought books and I would say within 3 days, I knew he had dyslexia.
Fantastic. Wow. It just shows how important it is to tell the stories, isn't it?
Yes,
because
it is.
They plant seeds, don't they, in people's minds. And, mm-hmm. you know, 2 years later, you know, that mm-hmm. story came to guide you.
Definitely. I mean, I would say there are a couple of people who guided us as our angels. And, you know, that friend is one of those people. And actually, you know, I'm always honored when my friends or people that, you know, hear our story come back to me years later and say, we heard your story and we related to that. And we know our children had dyslexia because of your story. And that just is like a pay forward for me. I love hearing those stories.
Well, I like to give some shout outs to people that have helped. Can you name a few names and say a few shout outs to them and thank yous to them?
I would say my biggest thanks probably goes to my son's tutor. Her name is, we call it Miss Beth. I always call her our angel without wings. She, I would say, is probably the single-handedly person that helped my son most. She wasn't just a tutor. She understood the emotional side of things. You know, he was just turning 7 when the tutoring started, and they were together for almost 5 years. So my son really grew up, not just academically, but also emotionally with her. I would say his school, even though, you know, we had some, you know, differences in opinion, they have been an unbelievable support. I can tell that he feels so confident because the school has supported him as who he is. They never tried to put a label on him. They never tried to force him to fit in a box. And they always celebrated his strengths while supporting his weaknesses. So fantastic. I would say, because, you know, we do what we do as a family is, you know, what we do as a family, but outside has so much effect on the emotional well-being of these children. And that's something, you know, no matter how much we want as parents, we can't, you know, we can't really protect them from it. So
it's a good story in that you can't do it all yourself, having the tutor and the school. I always think that having dyslexia is a team sport. you need a team around you as a child. You also need a team around you as a parent. And even once you get into the workplace with dyslexia, you end up, you know, really thriving in teams. Often we end up leading teams, but we need the team to thrive ourselves.
That's so well said. That's so true.
So we've talked a little bit about what dyslexia was like before and what woke you up. And it's always intriguing to find out what you found was the main challenge in that journey. And I know that you're an author and a publisher. I'm really intrigued to see how this set you in that sort of direction. Were you an author and a publisher before all of this? You said you were an engineer.
I'm an engineer. I have written only one story in 7th grade. I always had grades as low as like bare minimal passing grades in English, history, geography, anything that had words as the foundation of the class. And I thought that I could write a story to bring my grade a little bit higher up to make sure that even if I fail the final, I would have a good chance of passing. So, and there was quite a big portion of our final grade. I went to the library, I borrowed books, and from the same author, I read them. I felt like there was a process in there. My engineering mind started kicking in. I said, okay, this is how they write the story. This is how the character develops the plot, and this is the climax, and the ending happens this way. So I wrote my own story. I was very proud of it. I got a very decent grade, but the teacher made a note saying, get less help next time, which kind of made me believe, like, what was I thinking? Even though I was very proud, that was my only somewhat pleasant experience with, you know, with writing a story.
So let me get this right. You said the teacher said, get less help next time, because she presumed the story was so good that your parents had pretty much written it or something like that.
Yes, and what's ironic is, you know, when I went to an American school, so everything we did was in English. And my parents didn't speak English to to even help me. I mean, I guess my older sister could have, but it's one of those things that, you know, people like my teacher, who I felt was a, you know, sweet lady, just not really understanding, or even assuming. She didn't even pull me aside after class saying, "How did you write this? I would like to understand your process." And if I explained it to her, she would clearly see that I did it on my own, because it was a very well, you know, very well put together thought process behind it.
I find that fascinating, because so basically you deconstructed the books you read, mm-hmm. and found the formula, the underlying formula, and then you applied that formula like it was a mathematical equation, basically, and turned it into a story.
Pretty much, because I really didn't like reading books. I was probably in my late teens, early 20s when I actually started reading books. I liked Agatha Christie's novels. That was pretty much the only thing I enjoyed reading. And then when I started reading, they were mostly just nonfiction books about, you know, personalities and, you know, how to become better in, like, self-improvement.
What author was it? Was it Agatha Christie or Enid Blyton or one of those authors that was dyslexic? I can't remember which one.
Yeah, Agatha Christie actually was dyslexic, and I learned that just a couple of years ago, which I thought was fascinating.
So was it an Agatha Christie book that you deconstructed?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was it was a romance story.
Okay, got you. So I find that fascinating, because actually that's one of the things that I teach my students to do with mind mapping. So I tell them that you need to see the structure of the story. And, you know, once they can see that structure, instead of a teacher saying to them, "Oh, it needs a beginning, a middle, and an end," they're like, "I see the structure, I see the formula." And then they can really engage, because you're actually operating on a sort of more conceptual realm rather than on a technical detail realm.
Yeah, I think back then and even still today, like, rote information doesn't really stick well with me. I had, you know, even though I'm really good with numbers, I do remember having significant trouble learning the times table, which was very frustrating to me, because I could do, you know, math 2 or 3 grades higher up, but the times table was something that I struggled quite a while. And I feel like it's... like, if you ask me now what a plot is, I won't be able to tell you in a very professional way what it is. But in here, it's all mapped out.
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. So let's get back on track with your story. How did you become an author then?
So that's a great story. It's quite of a desperation, not inspiration, I think. So my son started Wilson, as you were saying. That's one of the programs out there. And he liked stories quite a bit when he was younger. He said, "I want to read a book." And as soon as he built that confidence that, "Oh, I can actually start reading," he picked a Dr. Seuss book and read it. It was, you know, 190 words, I think, in the book. You know, hard pages, like a baby book. And he was so proud of himself. And he said, "I want to read a chapter book like my friends do." And, you know, I kind of realized that it was going to be probably another year, maybe 2 years, before he could get to that level. In the meantime, now he's starting second grade, and he started having challenges during quiet or independent reading time, because all the kids would sit there with a book and read, and he would just read that, look at the book, and then he's probably mind wandering elsewhere, and he wouldn't follow directions, meaning sit down quietly and read a book that you pick from the shelf. So I wanted him to have a book that he could decode based on what he has learned so far, because he worked so hard and he was saying, you know, "All I'm doing is I'm stuck with the baby books," and he didn't want it. And I could see it was affecting his self-confidence. And he again started saying, "I don't like books. I don't like reading," which I knew in my heart wasn't true. But I think it was his defense mechanism and saying, I don't want to give it a try because I know I'm going to fail just one more time. So so I started with my our first book, Sam is Stuck, which I have right here. I love this book because it's truly, you know, the book that I would say created the whole thing.
Sam is Stuck.
So I put everything in there that I wanted as a mom in a book. So there's a gift tag because I always believe that reading is a gift to a child. It has a story, very few illustrations, but the illustrations cannot be used as a clutch because it doesn't really explain what's happening in the story. So as you can see, it's quite a big story. It's actually one of our shortest books in this level. And then I have a certificate of accomplishment.
Oh, fantastic.
That they can fill. My son is really big into, he would go and take like a skiing lesson and they would give a certification and that we would put it up there, like, look what I got. So he was very big into this. And everybody who knows my son and seen this book, they said we can tell that it was written for him. So that's, I'm really emotionally tied to this one. One thing that I wanted was to have a word list in the books. So I could flip through it as a parent and say, oh, okay, these are the words in it. And my reader can read this book without pain. And if there are words that are difficult, then I could say, okay, these are the words maybe the reader should study before to make it easier.
I see. So you can make see sure you can read all of those words before you read the book.
Yes, or you can practice, and some of there are a few maybe harder words, like in this one, like I use more, only a couple of times. Then they can say, okay, this is how it is, and maybe it becomes a sight word for them until they learn the rules. And then I have a comprehension book for each book I wrote because, having struggled with comprehension so much, I know it's really the most important thing in reading. I mean, I read fast, I read fluently, but if I'm not understanding what I'm reading, what's the use of reading?
What is a comprehension book?
For every chapter, I have four stories about four questions about what's happening in the story.
Okay.
So you can really check if they understood what they were reading. And if they haven't, maybe, go back and practice comprehension as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So you wrote this story for your son?
Yes. And I learned all the software and everything that goes behind it. And it was a PDF file. I would print it and fold it like a book. And I would always keep a copy in the car and copy in the house. And the copy in the car always went away to somebody who says, my son is struggling, my daughter is struggling. I said, I'll just try this one. It seems to be working for us. And it was very helpful for him to, practice fluency. Because, it's practice makes it perfect, they say, although I don't believe in perfect anymore. I'm a recovering perfectionist. You really need to practice. And to be able to practice with your full heart in there is, when you get the best results, you really have to have some material that you enjoy. And I saw that my son did not want to continue practicing with, cats sat on a mat, the frog is on the log.
And so how many times did he read the book then, if you're talking about practicing? Did he read it over and over again?
He did. So I didn't just write the story all at once. It was a pretty big learning experience for me as well. So I would write a page and he really didn't have stamina to read a whole chapter at once. So again, this is going back to his at the end of age 7, early maybe 8. So he would read like one or two sentences and he would say, I read one sentence, you read one sentence.
Okay.
And then the sentences became paragraphs became chapters. And then he was able to, read a book.
So did you write it as fast as he learned to read it? Is that how it worked?
Pretty much. Sometimes
you were just a few pages ahead of him sort of thing.
Yeah. My goal was 200 words three times a week. And that's kind of how the whole book came together. I usually wrote when he played soccer and I was in my car, waiting for the practice to be over.
And how long ago was that you wrote that one?
That was 2016. So when the book got published. So 2015, 2016 when I was writing it.
5 years ago.
Yes.
And then how long was it before it got printed as a normal looking book?
So I actually thought I would just publish this, because people by then were saying, oh, you got to publish these, you know, you have a gem in your hands. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm not an author and I have a full-time job. I have two little kids. I'll do it when I retire. But I met Barbara Wilson, who created the Wilson Program.
I was going to ask you, actually, that was one of my questions before you go there. I was going to ask you, don't the Wilson Program have their own kind of staged reading books that children get and read through? Because don't they have something like that already?
Yeah, I think they came out with it maybe 2-3 years ago. They didn't have it when, so they had a lot of text, but it's because it's so controlled, and it's supposed to be, right? I mean, when you're doing a program, you really have to follow the steps religiously. That's why I think the program is so successful, and you really have to have controlled text versus just decodable text like my books are.
And what do you mean by there, controlled text?
Controlled text meaning if the student has not learned that rule, then that word is not there because they cannot read.
Okay.
So, for example, in my books, they're decodable, but I use words like by or out, which are sight words for them. And but like Wilson would not add it into their passages. Or maybe just teaches a sight word for that passage, but you know it would be relatively dry in my opinion. That was my son was saying.
Okay,
like he would be so saying, it's a dry reading.
Technical yeah. reading at in Wilson, but then your book is more of a relaxed or enjoyable reading.
Yeah, I think so. I think you can say that probably. And I haven't really studied their the new books that they came out with. I think they have a series of books that they came out with. I ran into them. They seem to be a different approach than mine are. And, you know, I have so much love and respect for the Wilson Program. So I'm not saying what they're doing is good or bad, but it's just different.
So certainly at the time of this, there wasn't a sort of a library of books that the children could go away and practice on that Wilson had produced. So there was this gap. So back to where you were, you met Wilson and talked. What happened then?
So she actually had a different path. And I think she was helping adults who are dyslexic. And she said, we need to start teaching kids when they're younger, because she was saying, if I wait until they're adults, you know, she can't undo what has happened in their childhood. And it really clicked. And I literally was in tears when she was telling the story, because I said, I have these books and I need to really start putting a lot more effort into this than just, oh, it's a small, you know, family project. Because if I waited another, you know, 20, 25 years to publish them when I retired, then it's that many years of children who wouldn't benefit from the books while they're sitting on my shelf. And I just couldn't live with that. So I said, okay, then I guess I'll just learn to self-publish, because I went the traditional publishing path first, but it was so hard to explain to an agent, editor, publisher, and everybody who's involved in the publishing process what dyslexia is, why it's so important to have these books out there. Nobody really believed that 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 10, possibly depending on, you know, the region, country, and how it's looked upon, could have dyslexia. They didn't really understand why I chose certain words the way I did.
Yeah.
And I said it was just going to be too much work and too much effort spent on things I wasn't going to bring value. So I said, let's just jump on the self-publishing wagon. And if other people are doing, I'm sure I can do it too. So I learned, and it took a year to get the first book as ebook, another year to get the first book as a printed book. And then it's just, you know, one book after another. So now I have like 10 books at this level, which are from, like, you know, 4,000 to almost 9,000 words per story. And then I was asked to create stories that are at the earlier level, easier to read. And I loved what one of my teachers said to me: we need the kids to grow with your books. And I said, okay, I'm doing it. So now I have 4 books that are early level, which are, you know, very similar format, thinner, font is bigger. The story is shorter. They're about 2,000 to 3,000 words. And that there I only used short vowels and single syllable words. And fantastic. As I think one of your questions were, do you tend to start projects and not finish? I usually have about 5-6 active titles going on at the same time. I know most authors just kind of sit down, write a book and publish that and move to the other one. They're like, oh, how did you finish like 4 books at the same time? It's because I worked on all those 4 for 2 years while I was publishing 3 other at the other level.
You're definitely dyslexic.
That might be my superpower. Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell by the way you talk and the way you that quiz and the traits. You're definitely dyslexic. Yeah. You can tell, you know, when you speak to someone, when you just see the way they work and the way they think, you know, the traits. So you've started, so you've got all these published yourself. And what's the publishing house called? What's your...
So we have actually started the publishing house called Simple Words Books, and therefore Decodable Books. And about 3 years into it, I had other authors coming to me and saying, you know, we have stories to tell about neurodiversity. And we're trying to go the traditional route like you have. And it's tough. You know, they traditional publishers, rightfully so, they want to sell as many books as they can, and they want to have a story that's marketable to the masses. Whereas, you know, my target audience has never been the masses. I just want to have the best readable book for a small group of audience, but it really does the work that I intended to do. So their goals were similar. They want to tell their story. And sometimes the stories are heartbreaking when they're younger, the struggles they had, and as an adult, how they became successful. So they said, we need people to really be authentic and understand what we're trying to do. And so now I started publishing for other authors under Matt Corral Publishing.
Fantastic. And where do people get your books?
So it's sold on our website, simplewordsbooks.com.
We'll put that in the description below if you want to swipe up on your podcast app just now. If you just swipe up in the description, there'll be some links. And we'll put that in the links. You can click on the links and go and have a look at some of the pages, the front covers of these books on the website.
And also on Amazon as well. And I mean, you know, Barnes & Noble's, Walmart, they're everywhere. You can buy them online. And we ship everywhere globally. It's, of course, if you have Amazon on your in your country, it's easier to get it and cheaper to get it from there. But on my website, if you order, if you click on the book, a small box comes up where you can ask it to be autographed, and I autograph it for free. You know, I feel like I knew my son liked when he got his name in a book autographed by the author in his school every so often would do that. And I realized that having one more reason for them to pick up that book and give it a try is worth that extra effort. And I don't charge because I don't want anyone to feel like they have to pay for that.
That's fantastic. You know, this has been, do you write their name in it as well? Do you kind of?
Yeah, I mean, they tell, I usually have, you know, things that I write, encourage, I keep on reading, you know, enjoy reading, you know, dream big and follow your heart. They just tell me their name. And sometimes, you know, there are people who want to have a specific message.
Fantastic.
I have also like books about, you know, outdoors and sea, and they're like, oh, you love sailing. Like you will say like, Chidam, you love sailing. You'll enjoy this book, Grandma. You know, then I say Grandma and I'm like, and then Chidam can have it under it.
Fantastic. That's what a lovely service. So it's not just signed by you. There's an actual message and their name in it and so on. Well, that's valuable in and of itself. That's hugely valuable to have that.
Yeah. And sometimes I get like big orders from schools. They say, okay, we need 150 books and like, you know, please, like, it's, you know, there's a long elementary school name, and, you know, and then the teacher's name, and like my students. I take the time to do it in every single book. And if I think it just makes a difference. I heard unbelievable great stories about how excited the readers were because it was photographed by, and then, you know, there are kids who email me, and I email them back, and the parents email me on a separate note. It's like they cannot believe that they heard from the author. I mean, again, it's not just the, you know, the sales and all the stuff. Like, it's to get these kids to really give reading a chance. So whatever I can do on my end, I will do it.
That is fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I often like to ask people, you know, their mind mapping story, you know, because this podcast is sponsored by Bullet Map Academy. And Bullet Map Academy is all about mind mapping. And, you know, a lot of people have different experiences of mind mapping within the world of dyslexia. Some people know what it is and they do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And other people are like, I tried it and I didn't like it. And other people are like, I don't know how it applies. What's been your experience of mind mapping and dyslexia?
I feel like I live my life mind mapping. I mean, if I'm going shopping, I mind map for my grocery list, right? I mean, that's how I truly live my life. And wow. I'm very lucky to be married to another engineer who has it too. When we were thinking that my son could have dyslexia, you know, it's a mind map comes, there's a dyslexia in the middle, okay, reading, writing, emotional support, and all the stuff, and, you know, the books to read, and people to call, and, you know, people to call who would know people to call. You know, when you do a mind map, it's so easy to expand it.
Wow.
And I've been, you know, I've been fortunate enough to, I think, study engineering, where it's really values mind mapping for innovation and new product development, which was one of the areas that I really fell in love with. So I felt like it really compensated for so many stuff that was extremely difficult for me in organizational side. And it just made things, I'm very visual. And with mind mapping, the beauty is you don't have to be organized in a very structural, traditional way. Like, I could start with one word in the middle and I can do this, and then, oh, I can go here and I can just jump on it. And I mean, if you look around here, I have all these like huge, hold on one second.
Cheekden is going off to get a map as we speak and show it to me, show it to us. And if you're listening on the podcast, I will describe it for you. Go for it. What have you got there? You got a map there?
So I have this, my son's coloring book, which he didn't use. So let's open a single page.
Right.
Mind mapping, right?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
This is how we were doing a project about how to teach authors how to write. So it's all about, again, like going to what can be done, what are the processes. And the beauty is you can see the colors, the post-its. And you really don't have to be very organized in the way you think. And yes. And then, of course, putting this on paper first. And I have a turn another page. I think this is my first mind map about my books. Again, very colorful, all different ideas.
Can you put it up just a bit closer, sure, please, so we can see it?
Maybe. Is this better?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the beauty is once you have it on paper, it's so easy to put it on a software.
Yes.
Where actually it becomes something you can share with others.
Yes.
But for me, this is really how I organize my thoughts. And it just makes life so much easier and so much more productive.
That's fantastic to hear. I mean, I didn't know which way you would go with the answer. You know, listeners, I did not plant Cheekdom here as a mapping fan, because it's just fascinating to see, you know, how people react to it. Like, I can see in you that, and I can see it in myself, is that often I'll try and do something and not map it out. I'll just write out that story, or I'll just go and do that, and then you get all confused and muddled and it takes forever, and you're like, do you know what, I think I'm gonna have to go away and map this out. And then you go map it out and then it works, and you do it enough times to realize I'm not gonna get this done right unless I map the thing.
Yeah. My first book has 5 editions. It's because I didn't map it. I mean, you know, it was a whole different mindset of why I was writing it.
Yes, you were doing it as you were going along.
Yes, and I never even knew if I would finish the book. You know, I just wanted a few more paragraphs for my son to read when, you know, we sat down at bedtime.
Yes.
So so when this became a project where I said, okay, this is going to be presentable to other people, and I said the next level is always, you know, in quality of work is always mind mapping for me. And I wasn't a very big fan when it was first introduced to me. I thought it was a waste of time because I'm a person who wants to dive in and start doing things at once.
Yes.
It wasn't intuitive.
Yes.
But when I really understood what it does and how it does it, I realized actually intuitively that's what I do in my mind. It's just it's not organized. It's all jumbled up.
Yes.
So it's really
I think that's one of the reasons why we've got that question. Do you ask why so much it can annoy people? Is that it's until we understand the why, we actually we need the why to actually remember the how.
Yes.
So it's like, don't just tell me what to do. Some people tell me what to do and then I know how to do it. I can't remember how to do it unless I know why I'm doing it, because I reconstruct it from the why, not the what. So that's a lot to explain. But basically, I work from first principles and I recreate everything I do from first principles. And when I understand why you do branches in a map, why you do keywords in a map, why you do doodles in a map, then I go, ah, that's why. The branches are there to create the structure and order, or discover the structure and order. The doodles are there to remember core ideas. The keywords are there to help, you know, with the details and so forth. So, you know, once you start understanding the why, the how becomes easy.
And I think it's a great tool to communicate your ideas to others.
If they know your language.
Yes. Because I tend to just kind of, you know, speak and speak. And then I say, what was I saying 10 minutes ago?
Yes.
I just kind of, I don't know, I might be a dyslexic tendency too. But, you know, my story just goes on and on. And I don't even remember where I started and why I'm all the stuff to you. But with a mind map, it's so easy to keep track. And like I always say, it's like going from New York to Florida on a flight. It's somewhat of a straight shoot on the East Coast. And the plane, you know, always takes a little bit right and left and different directions with an angle with the wind and all. But you still end there in a relatively, you know, set amount of time. Whereas without mind mapping, the way I was working is I would probably go to Ohio, then to Seattle, to the West Coast, and then come back. And I mean, I do end up at the same place, but probably 3 days later versus a 3-hour flight that I could have taken.
Yes. I mean, I do that with the students in Bullet Map Academy. So students with Bullet Map Academy, we teach, I know you probably don't know this, but we teach children how to mind map to overcome dyslexia in school. So, you know, there's children who learn to read, and then once they've learned to read, they find difficulty with comprehension, and then they find difficulty with writing a structured piece of work. And they don't actually get taught that visually at school. So we do that segment between learning to write, read, and then learning English. So, you know, there's English techniques and all that jazz and devices and all that. But in between that, the teacher assumes you can just write a bullet point list of your essay structure. And you're like, no, I can't. I need to see it before I can write it. And so we teach kids how to do that. And one of the exercises we do, which is fascinating, is we get a child to sit there and explain a hobby. And they can ramble on about their hobby, which is fascinating, for 10 minutes. And you won't quite totally understand the hobby, whether it's Minecraft or Roblox or mountain biking or whatever. But if you get them to map it out, do a bullet map, there's a technique we use where you bullet point list all your ideas that are randomly down the side, underline some keywords, and then you do the map and structure it once you've got the jigsaw pieces down. It takes the confusion away. And then they just use the map to talk through. They can explain things so clearly. And some of the most powerful experiences is where we get kids together in a Zoom meeting, in study groups, we call them, take about 25 minutes. And each kid gets 2 or 3 minutes if they want to talk through their map. Well, some kids take their camera and they point it down on their paper and you see this scribble. It makes absolute no sense at all. The writing doesn't make sense. The branches don't make sense. It doesn't necessarily follow all the rules of mind mapping, but they put their finger, they point to it and they say, let me tell you the story of Macbeth. And there's this character and there's that character and this happened and then that happened and this happened and that happened, this happened, this happened. 3 minutes later, you're like, wow, that's beautifully explained. The thing that I keep telling my children is that the children in the academy is that you judge a map not by what it looks like, but by what it produces. And just seeing someone who's often all over the place just be able to explain themselves clearly is just one of those sublime moments as a teacher.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I think that's such a powerful tool for anyone, but especially for anyone who has dyslexia, I think.
Well, our final question is, well, we've got a few questions, but what advice would you give parents? And actually, I've got a question for you. I haven't primed you on this. If you were to send yourself a card as a parent back in time, just a greeting card, what would it say on the front of the greeting card to yourself? And what would be the message inside? And what time would you send it back to?
Oh, okay. So I'll make it a little bit funny to lighten up the mood. So I would say I would probably send it to myself when this whole idea about the books came. And I would say, you know, take your time in the front. And then inside I would say, mind map your business and your books. Okay. I had to redo so much because it all started as a, you know, family project. If you look at our logo, which I think is here, simple words.
Yes.
So that's actually my son's handwriting from when he was in first grade, when he first started writing the letters. So he would reverse P and D. So our initial logo was reversed with those two letters. And I would have it like right in the front because I'm trying to explain that this is like a decodable book and helps with fluency. And as the teachers were buying it, they would say, kids really hate that here. And we put stickers on top of it so they don't feel different. And, you know, they're like, oh, it helps with fluency, but they don't want a book that says it helps with fluency. They just want to read the book. And a lot of people said having P and D reversed actually sends a wrong message, which is actually very, very valuable feedback that I value a lot. But I didn't think about it as a mom. I was like, oh, it's so cute. My son wrote it. Because I never thought it was going to be a company. It was going to be, you know, as big as it got today. For me, it's just a small, funny family project. But if I need to answer it a little bit more seriously, I think I would send it to the day I started reading Overcoming Dyslexia book. And I would say it will be all okay. It will all turn out to be good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to kids?
Oh, that's a tough one. I really believe that emotional well-being of the person, child or adult, is, I think, the most important thing. I think everybody can do really big things in life, regardless of, you know, if they have, you know, physical disabilities, you know, like dyslexia or, you know, maybe coming from a very poor background. If they really put their mind into it and they believe themselves, I think there's so much that can be achieved. I think when the child stops believing in themselves and that they feel like, you know, they're they can't do things because they're not smart enough, they don't have the courage enough, then I think that's really the one that kills all the potential. And I really advise the kids to think, you know, dyslexia is not something that will stop them.
Thank you.
It's something that they can build upon, even if, you know, they feel like they can't read and write maybe as well as others, but they have no other skills. It's there, but maybe it's not coming out because they're not in an environment, an academic environment where those skills are needed. And I felt that way quite a bit when I was younger. I mean, I felt like I was good in math and science, not biology, because I had to learn all these spellings of these, you know, weird cells and all that stuff. But I realized like how much I had in me after I graduated from college. And I had so many skills that I could apply to becoming successful, where I never had to even realize what they were in an academic environment. So there's a lot in them they probably haven't even tapped into.
Thank you. Finally, I want to ask you a question. You said, you know, I wouldn't know how big my business became or the book. A lot of people don't talk about, could you give us an idea of, if you don't mind, you don't have to answer this, you know, where has the business got to and where is it going to? You know, like, how much are you distributing or who are you distributing to? Can you give us a picture of where things are at?
So we're just about to sell our 100,000th book.
Fantastic. So
that includes, you know, all of our publications out there. So that's, I always had 1 million in mind as a joke, but of course I mind map it and I have my spreadsheets all printed and you can only imagine all the stuff that I do. So, but I said, you know, I want to sell 1 million books. And I said, if I don't go shoot for it, how is it going to come to that? So I feel like I felt like my first 10 books was a huge success. I remember like really celebrating when I saw my 10th book. And I felt the same way about 1,000, and now I feel the same way about 100,000.
Fantastic.
And I love it when schools get it, because it really shows me that teachers get it. They're out there looking for decodable books, and I think the biggest success I would say I have is the stories I get from parents and teachers, and especially the readers when they email me saying this is how this book affected my life and how it made it better. I think that's the biggest success, knowing that somebody is having a better life because I took the time to do this.
Thank you very much for being on the podcast, Cheekdom. Final words, what would you, well, obviously we'll go check out the show notes. We'll put in all the relevant links. What sort of things should people do next? You know, check you out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, your website. How do you communicate with people?
Facebook is pretty big for us. You know, we're on Instagram, Twitter, although Twitter is not that much, we're not that active there. We do have a YouTube channel. When I first started our journey as a parent, there was not many podcasts and videos out there. So I started a summit. And it ran through 2017 through 2019. So I interviewed, you know, people that I found, I thought had interesting ideas. Not all of them are the ideas that I found beneficial for our family. But my motto has always been put the information out there. Just because it didn't apply to me or I didn't agree with it, doesn't mean that it's not valuable to another person. So we have interviewed a lot of people, including like Susan Barton, and there's information out there that they can hopefully benefit from, how, you know, early signs of dyslexia, how to diagnose it. We have people from UK that we interviewed as well. I would say the biggest recommendation I would give to a parent is if you have a gut feeling that something is off, I would say just follow through this. There's probably something off. It doesn't have to be dyslexia. It could be anything, but if you see something is off and you say, my gut feel says that I need to look into it, I would say, don't wait. Just even if your child is, you know, 6 or 15 or 25, look into it and, you know, try to put some parameters around what's happening, because with those parameters, the support comes and then everybody can lift the child or yourself. If you're an adult dyslexic, it could be, you know, lifting yourself up as well.
Fantastic. So what we'll do is we'll put those links in the show notes, and maybe you could send us some recommended, some of your top videos, and we'll put them as a specific link to go to that you would recommend. We'll put them all in the show notes for you to click through.
Sure. Sure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for being here. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. This was very fun. I love the quiz. I'll look into it in a bit different light now. It was a big learning experience for me as well.
Yes, great. Well, actually, if you're a listener, you can go to dyslexiaquiz.com and the link for it's there, or you can go to the App Store, type in Dyslexia Quiz. It's up the top. It's free at the moment. It's one of the highest rated dyslexia apps in the whole App Store. Well, it's at the top. And this podcast is brought to you by Bullet Map Academy, who sponsors it. Basically, Bullet Map Academy is all about helping children survive and thrive in school once they can read, actually, even if they can't read, by mind mapping their way through school by hand. And we teach children with our bullet map technique of mind mapping. We teach them how to understand what they read better, how to write stories that are structured and actually finish, and then how to remember things for tests and exams. We've got children who are as young as 7 doing it, and we've got, you know, 50-year-old doctors who are consultants and lecturers doing exactly the same course as our 8-year-olds and applying it to their circumstances as well. And we bring them all together in Zoom study groups. You've got one-to-one coaches, and you've got world-class online training videos all in one place. So that's Bullet Map Academy. If you're interested, get in touch. Go to bulletmapacademy.com. We also do these cool demonstration nights, actually, that we're starting to do at the moment on a Tuesday night, where you can come and watch me on Zoom take one person's problem that they're stressed out about, and we map it out live. I have no idea what their issue is, and we come up with the results, and we show how mind mapping can take you de-stress dyslexia and make you productive. So check that out. It's on Tuesday nights. Just go to our website. There'll be a link there. See ya. Bye. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.